Hello everyone, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have a special episode for you as scientist Dr. Nick Bagich joins us. Now, Dr. Bagich has been a pioneer in HARP research, advanced technology, and military scientific secrecy. Today he will go deep on the implications of the coronavirus, COVID-19, and its staggering worldwide supply chain disruptions. Dr. Bagich sees opportunist political and banking interests using the crisis as a way of centralizing control over public life. He will also go deep on the proven dangers of 5G technology and electromagnetic interference with organic life. Here we go. Dr. Nick Bagich, COVID-19, 5G AI wars. Nick, it's great to have you with us. Now, let's start with the coronavirus or COVID-19. What are we looking at here?
You couldn't have asked for the more perfect storm, but this is, they're not going to put this one back in the bottle so quickly. This is a real mess in terms of supply chain, everything. Doesn't matter whether it's a real deal or not. It's perceptually real, and the impact is already felt, not undoable.
That's a good point, actually, which is you'll hear a lot of discussions about, oh, is this engineered? Is it a fake out? All these things. But at this point, it's already affecting all these companies anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, you've already had this huge downside. You've had this incredible slide in the market. You have supply chain interruption that can't be replaced. You've got seats that are empty that can't now be filled. Fuel oil that's dropped in price that can't be shoved back in. And you can't create demand where there isn't any. And there was already the lowest Baltic Dry Index, you know, ever. And now it's even worse, you know. I mean, so when you think about supply chain, it's the raw materials being mined, shipped out of Brazil, whose currency is down 20% over about a month ago. And then it's got to get to China, get through the port, get to the place, get turned into something. And then get put back in a warehouse, put back at the port, clear the paperwork, spend 6 weeks coming across the ocean, go through a port and clearance, eventually end up in a warehouse in a retailer near you. And you know what? That's a three-month equation.
Wow.
And 2 months in, one more month, and you can't catch up with the whole supply chain loss without another full quarter. So we're already in the second quarter. We're already headed into the third quarter before you could stabilize this, no matter what you do. Because Fed can only affect demand. And when there's nothing to buy, it doesn't matter. It's supply side that's interrupted. Can't fix that.
Right, exactly. So like them going down to zero doesn't really make much of a difference.
Nope. And, you know, and you can't pick up the sales you lost. I mean, you might see a surge when this is all over, but it's be a cautious one. People aren't going to part with their money so quickly. And this gives cover to the Fed and to everybody else that I was watching.
Right, yeah.
Or I thought the bubble was, you know, the Fed was hitting the bottom, yeah. You know, and they weren't going to be able to do anything. And everything they didn't work. And the problem is it's structural. Everyone's in 401ks. Huge amount of money flows into markets every month and nowhere else to put it. So it artificially shoves value up where there isn't any because mm-hmm. there's just demand on the buying side. And now it's fear on the buying side, and that's not going to change. People who lost in 2008, close to retirement then, who rode it all the way to now to get even, they're not doing this again. Right. They're out.
Right.
We're good. So we got a lot more distance to cover, and you ain't seen nothing yet. And if you're, and I follow a lot of news feeds, you know, I mean, that's what I do. And most of the day, when I look at this thing, this isn't a quick recovery. You may see a big spike up again, you know, because people go, oh, this is really looking good, but structurally it's still crummy. So you can go ahead and hang decorations on a dead tree, but
exactly.
Still going to look ugly at the end of the day, and I think we're still in for a while of this. So,
when you look at the response in America to the COVID virus, it's kind of interesting.
A joke. I'll tell you why. I flew out of the U.S. on the 25th of January through Hong Kong into Thailand. Okay. And going into Thailand, they checked my temperature with an infrared camera at a distance. And we watched them pull someone out of line whose temperature was too high, and the hazmat people appear and, you know, move them out of the crowd. Now, this is 20, going in, by the time we got there, time changed everything, it's 27th of January. Okay, now coming out on the 8th of February, they checked our individual temperatures leaving Thailand. They checked our individual temperatures when we landed in Hong Kong. Halfway through the airport in Hong Kong, they checked our temperatures again. Then we flew nonstop to Seattle and arrived on the morning of the 8th of February, and they didn't ask us where we'd been. They didn't ask us what we'd done. They didn't ask us anything about anything and didn't check anything. And my friends who came in on the 28th of February had the same experience coming in from Asia, from Hong Kong, from China to the U.S. We didn't do anything. And, you know, that's, you're in it, all right? Now, explain to me why. No, you don't have to. The third world was organized and we weren't. The third world doesn't require a committee. They have leadership that actually responds. And every airport manager and every port authority should have already taken independent action, not just the president. President, you know, is out there, but these things should have been done at the local level, regionally, and by the appropriate people within his administration, within the bureaucracy. But they're so used to committee actions, and nobody wanted to take an action. Nobody wanted to be responsible for a decision. And that's the deficit we have in the country is leadership from the smallest bureaucratic level all the way through. And those guys aren't engaged. They're not acting. They're not doing. The private sector will. I have confidence in the private sector.
Right.
Today, private sector companies are going to start testing for this virus with their own testing method, not wait for the CDC. That's happening now in the U.S. Thank God it is, because they're actually efficient.
Right.
The CDC isn't. They should have caught this long ago. It's the CDC's fault. Fire those people and hire some new ones, because they obviously failed.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing that it got so out of hand so quickly. And, I mean, so many things have come out about the origins of it. You've gone on the record saying it's, you know, that's kind of the secondary issue in a sense. Because,
it is.
Yeah. We're already rolling.
It doesn't matter why it started. Here's the other thing is, when you have these things happen, people look at this as an opportunity to learn.
Right.
Right? Now, if you think governments don't have a playbook for this, you're wrong. Because here's the way it works within government planning service, particularly the Pentagon, where this planning did take place. They have some people they use as futurists, and they take scenarios, crazy scenarios like pandemics, aliens landing on the White House lawn. I mean, you wouldn't believe what's in the portfolio, all right, of craziness.
Right.
But they got a playbook. Somebody sat down and went, okay, if that happens, what do we do? And they map it all out. They game it all out. And so on the shelf is this playbook. They pull it down. They start implementing the plan unless something comes at them in left field. And so to think there's no plan is naive. Who has the plan isn't obviously the CDC, but I guarantee you the Pentagon has a plan because they always do. They anticipate the worst. I knew one of their futurists who laid out these kinds of things. This isn't done in a vacuum.
Right.
Ever, you know. So it's an opportunistic opportunity for bankers to have cover for what they screwed up, for financial institutions that leverage themselves into this craziness, right, to have cover as they loot the pension funds once again. And that's what we're seeing play out. Now, I would also say this is, this might be the very first disastrous financial crisis where the incumbent wins.
Yes.
Watch and see. Watch and see. Because I don't think we're good for socialism yet, and I don't think Joe is going to stay healthy enough by election day.
Doesn't look like it.
No, I can't imagine it happening, you know. I mean, any three of these guys could drop dead, you know. I mean, not spring chickens, you know. I mean, come on, they're a bunch of old white dudes, and they're all old, really old. So You know, and they're stressed out. Believe me, this thing is stressing people out. You know, the presidential race alone is stressful enough. And wow, what a bag of garbage to inherit. You know, and I even heard, you know, talk about a dumpster burning. There's even literally a dumpster burning around the corner from the White House this morning. So, I mean, what a metaphor, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, like, pretty bizarre. But when I think about all this, I mean, really, when I think about it, these are also times when people kind of reset their own personal clock, you know, in terms of how we view the world and what we do within the world. And coming out of this one, we need to be a little more intelligent about what we're doing in terms of our investment and retirement. And people need to quit being forced to put all the retirement into the casino of the stock market.
Right.
You know, think about it as a real asset. It's I was telling my fiance earlier today and yesterday, it's a puff. It's like an air puff. It doesn't represent anything but the hope and a dream of a company. And yeah, you can say, well, it's, you know, it's paper. Well, it's one level removed from fiat, okay? It's really one level removed from fiat currency, which is backed by nothing but hope, right?
You're right.
And full faith and credit, I guess you'd call that hope. But, you know, when you think about stock certificates, they got a little more in them, you know, because they have something to them. But when they're overinflated because you don't have anywhere else to put your money and the earnings are way down and all these things that are fundamental don't seem to work anymore, it tells us that it's not an overbought situation. It will always be overbought when that's the only place people can put retirement money.
Right.
You know, so we need to rethink how we do retirements and allow people to put their money elsewhere, like in their home equity for their retirement. Maybe we ought to open that gate up so you can preserve your home equity and build some, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to rethink it so that we put our assets in real property again. You know, think of 100 years ago, everybody, 90% of Americans were farmers. And what did that mean? People say that we lost trillions of dollars in wealth in this Downs thing this last few weeks.
Right.
We didn't lose wealth. We lost toilet paper, ladies and gentlemen. And the reason is because of this. When you think of wealth, it's four things. Look it up. It's labor, entrepreneurship, capital equipment, things that make things like shovels and factories. And lastly, land and natural resources. Farmers owned all four of those things.
Right.
They owned real wealth, because those are the four factors of economic production. Now, between those things is fiat currency and stock certificates, toilet paper to affect exchanges of value that don't represent really the meat of it when it's overinflated because nobody has any place else to put their money. So don't tell me a stock certificate is real equity when half of it's puff because no place else to put your money.
Absolutely. So this could
economy.
This could actually hearken a whole new era where people start to look for things that are solid, real assets and stop dreaming into this whole stock bubble.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think people should. Because when you look at wealth over generations, what builds wealth is real property assets. This is land, buildings, things that generate rent. Because there isn't going to be any more land, guaranteed. There's only so much. And here's the thing is, populations generally increase. Demand for real property over time increases. Cost of labor over time and materials increases. So the long run on putting your thing in what is a combination of labor, entrepreneurship, capital equipment, land and natural resources called a house, you might be better off. And I think you will be better off. And history tells us we're always better off. That's why the crown in England never sold that last block of downtown London, right?
Right, yeah.
12 years on 100-year leases, 12 good leases, you know, over 1,200 years, right? They kept their wealth, the real stuff, the stuff that matters. Even your shovel matters because you can at least dig a ditch with it. Try and do that with your stock certificate. You know, the only thing you can do with that in a real capital sense, if it goes to nothing, is you can use it for fire starter and have some value intrinsically in the certificate. That's all it has at the end. So when you think about it all, I hate the stock market. I told you I did this short. I never did one in my life. Probably never do one again, you know. But the point is, it's an ugly place for people to have to put their future, really. And that's what we've done. We've gutted all the normal kinds of pensions we used to have in the country and replaced them with these. Even at state levels, we've done that. And if you remember, that was the big pitch in the 80s during Reagan. Hey, let's just all do 401ks. Can you imagine going through the last few of these rounds? You know, the one in the 80s and 87.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the one in, you know, 9/11's disaster. I mean, 2008. I mean, come on.
Right.
Really? We would be in such a mess right now beyond where we already are.
They would have taken Social Security and everything else.
Right. So now let's reassess all this, use this as an opportunity to reset. But this is what I'm more concerned about, is a reset in the wrong direction. Using the newly minted Chinese model, considering they're the prime actors on the stage of the world right now. And you see what's happening there. I mean, this is, and people are going along with it. In Italy, kind of going along with it. You know, you're going to see a clampdown and a rationale for doing things like, ooh, that ugly money you're transacting with paper. Ooh, that's spreading diseases. You know, I mean.
Let's all switch to digital currency.
Of course, yeah obviously, you know. And that way, when we have negative interest rates in the U.S., we can all pay with our savings
right.
a little bit every month to help in this crisis, you know, because that's what happens when you have digital currency and you're stuck in Germany where they're talking about it very seriously right now, where they have negative interest rates in the bank and where, at the end of last year, if people were paying attention, they made it illegal on the 1st of this year to buy gold in Germany without declaring it if it's over 1,000 euros,
nice.
Less than an ounce.
Wow.
Okay, so there were lines a block and a half long at the year end in Germany until they bought out all the retail gold in the whole country and no one even paid any attention to it.
Amazing.
This stuff I was watching at year end and I'm going, this looks really nasty what's coming, you know. And politically correctness on the open border issue in Europe.
Yes.
Buckle up.
Yeah.
Buckle up. Not just on the immigration problems, but now they have this pandemic to deal with too. And now they have real problems because factories in Italy that are absolutely necessary to feed the German car market haven't shipped parts, and that German factory has another 3 days before it shuts down. So, I mean, you know,
levels.
This is like,
yeah, it's all connected.
And it's supply chain. See, that's the important piece of this. Beyond, I mean, certainly the human costs are huge. That's like horrible going on. The secondary human costs are the ones we're talking about, which are going to hit people in 1, 2, 3 months. You know, after everyone's fog is lifted, you know, and the dust is cleared. And supply chain doesn't get refilled really fast. So I think that's something. But in all of it, it's time to rethink this. You know, how do we avoid this in the future to keep from pouring this fire hose of money into a market because people don't have an alternative place to park their cash?
They're already talking about stimulus in relation to the COVID virus. I mean,
what are you going to stimulate? A vaccine might be good. Stimulate that because, right. You know, and that can't happen. See, here's the deal that people don't realize is you can't just bring it out.
Yeah.
The reason they have the studies the way they do is because they can bring a vaccine out that instead of helping you, it kills you.
Right.
So you have to go through the trials, and those take a minimum of like 6 to 8 weeks, assuming everyone's on acceleration mode and paying attention, you know, because it's a virus and has a short deal. You're not waiting for a cancer to mature over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that happens pretty quick, so you can at least get a trajectory. But that's for trial one. That takes you into the end of April now, or April, assuming the Chinese were already on it. Betting that we were on it sometime in February, you know, it might put us in May. If the trajectory continues, the numbers I've read, hospital beds in the U.S. fill up between May 8th and May 20th. Somewhere in that range, they max out. That's not very long.
No, it's right around the corner.
Yeah. It's right there. So the thing that things can happen now that can slow things down, not much now because the horse has left the barn. There's too many people circulating around that you can't come back in and trace everybody now. It's too late. So we have to just buckle up and see what happens. The other thing is it is age. There's a lot of age reliance on what happens to you in this. And so we're seeing...
it hits an older generation.
Yeah, and in Northern Italy particularly. You know, if you contrast that to Korea, whose average age is much, much lower, you can see a big disconnect in the statistics, and that's why. It's age-driven also, and that's showing up all over the place in terms of what you're seeing, you know, index. And, of course, then the quality of the healthcare system matters a lot, but that quickly will get away from a lot of places because there's not a lot of excess capacity anyway.
Do you think that what this really illustrates is, you know, in America in particular, we have kind of a cycle of mistrust between the citizens and the leadership. And so when you bring out something, you know, there's going to be people on the citizen side who are looking at that and saying, oh, you're kind of introducing martial law in this backhanded fashion. So that's a tricky thing. And then you see when that collapse of trust takes place, it makes things so much worse.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say that that lack of trust already started. It started a long time ago.
Right.
And it's a lack of trust in a couple of quarters. There's a lack of trust of government, which we all share.
Right.
And here's what I would say. When we fear our government, we're in trouble. When the government fears us, we know we're doing it right. And the government needs to fear its citizens because we are the damn government. And we keep forgetting it. And we keep waiting for them to rescue us. Well, we're the them. Each of us to take action on our own behalf to do the right things in a calm and rational way when things are really crazy, and they're really crazy right now, and all of us see that. So it's time to be calm, because you'll never do anything smart when you're running on fear. And the opportunity to really mess with us right now is here, like you're saying. As things get chaotic, it gives a rationale for martial law, which then fuels, you know, that whole mindset of, oh, this was all pre-planned. Pre-planned or not, the playbook, I assure you, has been on the shelf for decades. So you can call that a pre-plan or however you want to do it. It doesn't matter. The plan is off the shelf and in play now. So it doesn't matter. Now it matters to stay calm and pay attention, because at the end of this, we'll come out of this. Viruses last a while. After a year or so, this will be gone, you know, out of circulation, mutated into something else, maybe worse, maybe better. Who knows? The world has always been uncertain. Always.
Right.
If you live in Mumbai last year, you had a miserable year, no matter who you were, pretty much, you know.
Yeah, right.
So it's all relative. You know, we just haven't experienced this kind of stuff in our world. And, you know, in the third world, when you fall a short distance. You don't get hurt very much. Here you fall from the Empire State Building, and it's more than hurts when you hit the bottom, you know. So we have to think about it, too, in proportion. We're reacting because what we have to lose is a lot, and it's being lost today. A lot of people lost a lot in the last few weeks. But let's rethink all this, you know, because otherwise we're just going to do it again. We're just going to overfuel this fire again, light it up, you know, get through this knothole, and everybody pat ourselves on the back. When they've screwed us down, who knows how much tighter by then in terms of what you can do. Digital money, be aware, man. I think this is coming to a neighborhood near you for all of these rational reasons that everyone will buy into. And safety and security is the biggest rational reason. And when people are insecure, they look for security. Well, this is the one thing there isn't any of, no matter what. It's just relative levels of where you sit at any given moment. And we sit in an uncomfortable place. So, you know, we're all in it together. Let's figure it out together. Let's map our way through it. Americans, we are incredibly resourceful. And we'll probably lead the way out of this along with a lot of others, you know, but hey, on the other side is the breath of life. Let's make sure we don't lose it in the course of some panic party that's happening all around.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's a great point. So you're saying that really it's important to have a kind of contingency plan, and that's kind of where the emphasis is or should be now.
Yeah, I think we should always have that. You know, in my part of the world, I grew up here in Alaska, okay? You have a contingency plan if you're thinking at all, because we're not hooked to the rest of the world. We're not hooked to your power grid or your supply chain or much of anything else. You know, you shut off us off and, hey, we're standing kind of independent from everyone else. Well, that's good and that's bad in certain ways. And, you know, when we look at it here, like right now, what's going to crunch Alaska horribly right now? Oil. Oil just fell through the floor here.
Yeah.
Tourism just collapsed. Those are the two leading industries in my region. This isn't going to recover quickly for us. It's going to take a long time. At the same time, the biggest investment bank, who we incidentally bailed out on the last round, have all announced in the last 3 or 4 weeks they're not investing in Arctic projects in oil and gas. Let me say that again. You know, the American public bailed all these assholes out in 2008.
Yeah.
And now they're telling you and me in regards to domestic oil and gas production, which keeps the price and our energy security intact, go screw yourselves, America. We have a better deal somewhere else. And this is where Americans need to get angry. Well, your kids are paying off their student loans instead of writing those off in 2008. We bailed out these morons that just built the same mess that we're living with this week.
Yes.
And we rewarded them for that bad behavior, first with the SNL bailout during the Bush administration, and then in 2008 with the next bank bailout. And now they're asking us to bail them out again. How about this? And they have something on the books most Americans don't realize. It's called a bail-in.
Right.
Very important. What does a bail-in mean? It means as a shareholder of the bank, you're a stockholder at the bank. Basically, you're an unsecured creditor. In the event of bad news at your bank, your savings account is just part of the unsecured debt of the bank.
Amazing.
So, yeah, you're covered by your insurance, so you have that FDIC. But if you're the big client with over the FDIC amount, and the FDIC is a nice thing that makes you feel good as long as there's money in the bank.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Pay it out. Okay, so all of this is hope, mm-hmm. again. Based on fiat currency again, based on full faith and credit again of the United States, which right now is, and only by virtue of the fact that it is, the reserve currency of the world right now, that we're in this position. Because if the rest of the world decided to do something different, then we have a problem, a big problem. If you think we have one now, this is nothing. That's a big problem. Is that possible? Unlikely. There's no other replacement right at the moment. But that's, again, why the BRIC a couple years ago set up the Asian Pacific Bank to start creating alternatives to the SWIFT system and the Western banking system. All this was, you know, people were thinking, who those that do think and plan 40 years ahead instead of quarter to quarter like we do, Asians, particularly Chinese, think of things in generations, 40-year increments,
right?
10-year increments, 20-year increments, not quarters. Quarters are irrelevant in the big picture. It's about the long run. And the long run serves long-run planners. That's why China ran the show for 1,700 out of the last 2,000 years.
Wow. Yeah, right.
Yeah, people forget. You know, I mean, remember? It was Genghis Khan that went into Rome.
Right.
You know? They had control of things, you know, of trade, a lot of things until the 1700s when we got involved with China again. And then we screwed them around with the Opium Wars and all of that stuff, you know. And people forget this, but they just lost their window for a short bandwidth. You know, they're now the second biggest economy back in the world.
Amazing.
After 40 years of reinvigoration, you know. And a little bit of an intermission to figure out what was going on and how to steal everything. And they've done a really fantastic job of stealing everything. And now we rely on them for everything.
With a little help from corporate America.
Yeah. and even moving it back, which you're talking about, that doesn't serve us. Because right. when you move it back, you solve supply chain issues, but you're not going to create much labor. Because these new factories don't need much labor after they're built.
Right.
That's the point. Labor as one of those four important factors is now irrelevant.
Because of automation.
Because of automation. Mm-hmm. Capital equipment now is encroaching on the labor side of the wealth equation, making us less relevant. And, you know, this is important. I mean, these are big things happening in the long run, you know. And, you know, I've studied technology trends and economic trends and all kinds of things for the last 25 years. And when I see this thing framing up, it was predictable then, and a lot of this we predicted back then, you know, in terms of things that were going to happen, and not in some magical, esoteric way, by just analyzing the data. And, you know, you go, well, and the weirdest thing last year was none of it was adding up. You know, you see clearly what should happen, and it's not. Mm-hmm. And you're going, what in the hell?
What were they doing? Yeah.
How's that happen? Why isn't it happening? And then you start unraveling it, and you go, okay. Now I see a little different pattern, because that's what you need to look for, is step back and see those patterns start to emerge that then define the present a bit better and tell you a little bit more about what the future might yield, you know, in all of this. And I think is it that difficult? I mean, right now we're minus 2,000 on the Dow as we're talking right now. Now, I told my son this weekend, we're going to hit the record low, 2,000 on the Dow, minus on Monday. And he's like, really? You think so? And I said, yeah, this is going to be the Monday. It's going to be Black Monday, and it's horrible. And wow.
It's an incredible drop.
I can't believe it. I mean, I said it. I knew it. I saw it, but I still can't. This is what's not going to be here for a while for all of us. It's going to settle in as it settles in. People are still trying to catch their breath and stay calm. That's my biggest thing, you know, and I've been lecturing, you know, a lot in the last couple of years on the, and I've included a lot about fear because of what fear does. If you look at your brain, an EEG, and see what fear is doing, and you look at that, or anxiety, or any kinds of underlying stressors, and what they do is they interfere with the brain function in a way that rolls back to the reptilian kind of responses, a flight or fight. It's the higher order kind of thinking that take a slow, rhythmic brain pattern, a coherent pattern that's very rhythmic. Those vanish, okay? Those are what are associated with higher order thinking. These are what's associated with anomalous human performance. You know, when you jump beyond the physical normal, when you jump into that infinite sort of space.
Right.
You can't go there, and the science proves it, if you're anxious or stressed. So this is incredibly important because you might make the right decision. That's why we have a flight or fight response. If you're running from a lion, you know,
you're right.
But we're not running from a lion. We require higher intellect, ordered thinking. We require a deeper intuition, a deeper knowing. That requires calm. That's the challenge right now. And that's the answer right now in all of this. If you want to see stability return to the markets, then stability has to return to us individually in the sense of our own internal calm. And then you can start to project some of that out around you and calm your community and calm your state and calm this thing down. Because here's the other thing. Statistically, at the end of the day, we may find that this virus is no worse than any other virus. We may find that. I'm not saying that's going to be the outcome.
Uh-huh.
But the reason I say that is in October, when John Hopkins and the Gates Foundation and everybody announced and rolled out their new dashboard so you can follow pandemics, which is the one everybody's using right now, they're using it. Because it's got this great, you know, but what that does is give you a media event that allows you to point to this thing and hype it the way it's been hyped And because of communications today, which we've never seen in our history at this level, and with the fake news, because we all know the mainstream media is just cartoon news.
Yeah.
They're reporting things that I was telling my friends 3 weeks ago to pay attention to. They're showing film clips from news feeds I watched 3 weeks ago today. And I'm going, you people are idiots. You're part of the problem, because here's the problem. The public doesn't trust politicians. They don't trust the government, and they don't trust the media. So how do you have a public debate when you don't trust the sources that you rely on for honest debate? Because the politicians are posturing for party as opposed to purpose. They're posturing as politicians instead of statesmen, because you can't be both at the same time in the 21st century. You got to be one or the other. You got to be a snake oil salesman or a statesman. And if you're a statesman, you got risk. So most of these assholes are snake oil salesmen.
Yeah.
And I've known three generations of politicians and statesmen, okay? Yeah. Because my family's been in it for three generations.
That's right.
I've seen the movie at the federal, international level, the federal level, the state level, and the local level. Most of the people serving in government aren't serving in government. They're taking from you, from their positions in government, and handing it out to their friends. There are a few in government serving, but they're the minority right now, which is also why we have the problem we have. In the medium, they lack responsibility in the media. They believe that the freedom of the press means you can say whatever you want anytime you want. That's not what it was founded under. It was founded under the principle that an informed electorate, an informed population by vigorous public debate, stimulated by an honest media that would fight with each other. There were always competing newspapers. There was debate. There was conversation, and it stimulated that. Everybody had their set of facts, and we had a debate. Now we have the neutered news, right? That's what happened. About 80 years ago, they came out with, oh, all the news should be neutral. The neutral news. And if you believe that, I'm CNN and Fox all wrapped up into one nut. You know, come on. They're both editorializing an agenda that they believe in. I appreciate that. But then at least call it an editorial outlet instead of a news outlet. Be honest about it, because it's not news. It doesn't even look like news. It doesn't smell like news. It's propaganda intended to push you like a herd of animals, and that is not what we are. And this is what I resent most by all of it. They want to tag us as, oh, you're just a taxpayer, or you're just a consumer, or you're just to this or just to that. We're not just to anything. We are human beings with the full collective and individual capacity to do some really incredible things. We're created in the image and likeness of God, if you believe that, and the three biggest religions in the world do. Mm-hmm. I think we should act that way. And when we start acting that way, the thing changes. And it starts individually, and then it becomes collective, not the other way around. The reason no one's making decisions, because everybody was educated in their schools in America to do groupthink and to work in groups and be groups and wait for everybody to get consensus. You need leadership sometimes that stands out and says, we're doing something, so people know what to do. Someone has to lead. You can't do it all by groupthink. And this groupthink has eroded the sense of capitalism, the sense of individualism, the sense of opportunity that each and every one of us have to this very day in every breath we take, if we would just make different choices and then start acting in our own behalf. Once again, and not waiting for a committee to tell us what to do. We're already in the committee. It's called the human race. Take an action. You have permission. Be a committee of one.
Right. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic. You mentioned that about being from three generations of a political family. And I know your dad was the congressman from Alaska and your brother senator. You know a lot about that process. And so when we look at a lot of these senators and congresspeople in terms of some of the advanced technologies or things like DARPA, giving them a briefing or whatever, you've pointed out the incredible deficit in Congress and the Senate of people who understand the dangers involved in these kinds of technologies, especially as it relates to the Pentagon and DARPA.
Right. And here's the problem. Out of all of those people, those 535 members of the Congress, the House and the Senate. You have maybe half a dozen that have science background, you know, engineering and maybe medicine. That's it.
Wow.
They go in to close committee hearings. They cannot take their staff. They cannot take experts. They cannot take notes. They can't write notes. They can't do anything. So they get in there and they watch a dog and pony show, which is what the bureaucrats actually call them. You know, right. They go in, do their performance, BS the political leadership, and then go back to bureaucracy because they're there for 30 or 35 years. You know, they're just waiting for the administrations to ebb and flow. And so they do the dog and pony show. Everybody leaves and nobody asks an intelligent question, not because they're not intelligent. They just lack the relevant intelligence for the subject at hand. And here's the deal about the 21st century. In a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, this world is all about technology. If you're going to be a powerful government, which means you're going to be a powerful person in America, you better know something about technology. Including if you're going to sit in the Congress, because the most powerful countries in the world are those that have command and control of the biggest and best technologies, which makes every American responsible for every bullet that flies, every transmission that goes, every bit of technology that rolls out of this country from our government representing us and BSing the world, right?
Right.
Because that's what's been going on. And it's time to think about this technology, that it should really serve us, not undermine us as a population by suppressing us even further by a greater directed and controlled society. You know, Jim Rodrick and I wrote about this 20 years ago in two books, Earth Rising, the Revolution, and Earth Rising 2. And we talked about privacy. We talked about this technology. We did over 650 source documents in one of those books and 350 in the other, 1,000 between them. And what we predicted was exactly what you see today. You can still get those books electronically on Amazon. You can get them still on InfoWars. They're the only ones that handle my paper. Because I got out of all of it. You can't even buy anything on my website anymore because I don't sell anything. The only thing I do in the public space is this, is I spend a lot of my time as a scholar and then try and translate it into a conversation that we can have. That leaves us not with a sense of helplessness, hopefully, but with a sense of, well, I know more than I know now. I don't like all the news. I mean, it's not the best news, but I'm not afraid of the news because now I at least know what it is. And I understand it has a dimension called time. It's going to expire. You know, the virus will expire.
Right.
That's the good news. And then we will slowly come back to normal. But let's not go back to normal. That's what I would say. Let's reassess the very things that took us here again, twice in our generation, and let's make a real stab at fixing this economy by returning it to us and taking it back away from the bankers who have hijacked it under the Federal Reserve since 1913 and have abused us ever since. And to roll even back a little bit further, go back to the 1890s, when the U.S. Supreme Court took up a case on income tax. Most people don't remember this and aren't even taught in school. But at that time, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the 1890s that income tax was slavery. It was illegal. It was involuntary servitude. Remember the four factors of economic production. One of them is labor. And they decided that taxing your labor was making you a slave. In the Greeks' time, a couple thousand years ago, you know, they called wage earners wage slaves because it was just a different stratification of the same outcome. Okay, so we've institutionalized it. But when income tax was illegal and when the taxing of your labor made you a slave, we still ran a country. You know, and when they created the income tax, they created a couple other things at the same time. They created depletion allowances, which most people never understood and still don't, for the oil and gas and minerals industry, which gives them an effective tax rate at half of the corporate rate. Okay. You have to look into it and study it, but you'll see it. And what they do is they give you a credit against the resource that you're depleting from the ground. So it offsets your taxes. And what it does is give you an effective rate. Corporate rate in America is 20%. The corporate effective rate, if you're an oil and gas company or a minerals company, is 10%. It's almost a free ride, ladies and gentlemen. They haven't fixed that. And they haven't audited the Fed, which is the other thing that came out of that law in 1913 when they changed the Constitution. They haven't audited the Fed in 107 years. just a partial audit that covered a few years during the bad news after 2008. And in that little window, they showed that the Fed didn't spend $2 trillion bailing out the banks. They spent $16 trillion bailing out the banks because they didn't include in the data the international banks they bailed out at the same time.
Remarkable.
Our Fed did that. Look it up. It's on page 131 of the only audit ever done by the Fed. Look at it. And here's the thing about all of it. It's a snapshot. They've been screwing us forever, and they're screwing us again on steroids right now today as the whole thing crumbles. And they're going to say, it was the virus. It was the virus. It wasn't us. How convenient. Because that's how history will record it until people down the line record the honest events of what happened today and last week.
Incredible. That's what they're gearing up for. You know, it's amazing, too, because when you talk about this push for a digital currency, I did see the fact that they inserted that with the idea, well, the virus might affect money, so this will help us get this digital currency going. Why the big push, Nick, for the digital currency?
It's, again, opportunistic. And here's part of it, is I think part of it is it's a way of tracking all money. Okay, it's a way of tracking everything. It's the closest thing to the mark of the beast you've ever seen, all right, because this is it. Now, think of we said this a long time ago. I mean, again, back in when we wrote this stuff 20 years ago, I mean, get the books. They're great. I mean, they give you the data. But when we go back and look at that, the Internet of Things, right, 5G, we saw it coming. We said everything. Here's how the IRS is going to run an audit in the future. They're going to drive by your house and scan it. And every single thing in there with an RFID tag is going to register, and they'll go, how did you afford $963,283.22 worth of stuff to have in your house? Where'd you get them? You know, yeah. I mean, when you have digital currency, every transaction is taxed. Every transaction is tracked. Everything you do and everything about you is known. Everything about you is known. The predictability, you know, people, another one that people don't realize, go look at Technology Review for January, February's issue, and then do the backdrop and read the book Targeted, which is the expose on Cambridge Analytica.
Right.
And I wrote about this again in those same two books, about how political races would be won in this decade, and that's how they're being won. By analytics, by big data, by being able to analyze. Now, you only need 300 data points to tell what someone is going to do if you live with them for 5 years. 3,000 data points tell you about somebody who you live with for 20 years and will predict what they do better than they themselves. 3,000 data points. Cambridge Analytica had 5,000 data points on every American.
Wow.
Back then. Google has, on the average person, I mean, tens of thousands of data points. So here's what happens. And then AI in China, as an example, they use it for tutoring. So from 5 years old on, they know every nuance about it.
Amazing.
And they can predict with 99.9% accuracy everything you're going to do. Now, this is when you integrate this now into predictive models, and what's coming, and if you overlap the last ingredient, which is quantum computing, this is going to get really on steroids. And we're right there. Some say we already have it. If that's the case, then here's the equation. A supercomputer today at its optimum would be equal to everybody on the planet with a hand calculator doing a calculator about every 30 seconds for about 24 hours or more, right? And that would do what a modern supercomputer does in a second, right? Now, wrap your head around that for just a minute. Now imagine, instead of a second, that supercomputer running for a trillion years. Okay, now that's impossible to wrap your head around, but you get to kind of get the equation. A quantum computer will do what that trillion years is doing in 1 hour.
Amazing.
Okay, now what does that mean? That means every encryption on the planet is gone in like the first 5 minutes, and everything is hacked in the next 5 minutes, and there's no independent system. That's what quantum, first one to the race wins when they develop quantum computing. and all these data storage vaults that hold all this data on us, everybody told us not to worry about, where they were engaging data valence, and we were talking about this 25 years ago, all of it's now relevant. All that film footage about every place you've ever been, all that facial recognition data, every single thing that's ever been recorded that's in a system now profiles you perfectly. That's the world we're headed to, ladies and gentlemen, and that is the 1984 on steroids, that these events that we're witnessing today provide the gateway opportunities to pull the playbook off the shelf and start cramping down your civil liberties. Buckle up, stay calm, and hang on to what you have, because our civil liberties are the foundation of what we have. Nothing material matters if we don't have a value system to back it up, and that value system is not a cash register. It's about real things. It's about caring for each other. It's about recognizing what we are, about being honest about that, looking into our own soul and saying, hey, am I the person I should be? And the answer is always no. We can always be better, and that's where we should be in that trajectory. Not self-condemning to the point of blasphemy, because if you really are creating the image and likeness of God, how could you condemn such a great creation and run yourself into the dirt? Stop doing it. Dust yourself off and start making a different set of choices. And this is what we all need to do collectively at times like these. These are our greatest opportunity. I've said this on the air before in several venues. The biggest life-changing event in my life was the worst thing that ever happened to me. And it was my father's disappearance, because it forever changed me. It was the greatest gift he ever gave me, was that trauma that changed me so fundamentally into the person I am today. This trauma has the same potential to fundamentally change each of us into a very different person in the way we look at this and the way we move forward into this. We can let it run us, or we can take control of our individual decision-making once again and start making individual rational decisions that carry us through the day. That's what we should do. It's not a squishy collective. It's a group of individuals functioning individually for our own collective good. That way, not the other way around. Got to remember where it starts. Individuals acting responsibly. That's where our government begins. That's where our economy begins. That's where our lives begin. That's where this country began. And we need to remember who we are, what we are, in order to act in a way that's responsible in the world that we live in today. This is an opportunity, as much as it is a scourge, an opportunity to reset. So let's do it. We don't have an option now. We're doing it. So let's do it well. Let's do it well. Let's think about it this time. Let's do it well.
Fascinating. That's the stumbling block into a stepping stone kind of motif there. Very interesting. Nick, when you look at the automation and how far ahead they are of the public, the danger exists there that the public is so sort of desensitized to what they're rolling out and what their intentions are.
Right.
When you look at automation, you know, they have these supermarkets opening up without cashiers, and Amazon took over Whole Foods. Where are they heading? Where is the establishment or these corporate forces, where are they heading with this?
Well, again, it's headed for that more directed and controlled society. Ultimately, that's the outcome. I mean, we were talking about some of that. I mean, if you can track everything, then you can really tailor things, messaging. And this is what's happening. This is why everyone was so shocked at the last election. You know, when Donald Trump announced he was going to run, I told several people he's going to win the first time he ran. And everybody thought I was out of my mind. I said, no, the American public wants reality TV in politics. Because we've made it a cartoon. Now people want to be entertained.
Right.
And you know, and this is not, I mean, this is so wrong for what be happening. It's so fundamentally wrong, because it leads us into really dark places. And I supported Donald Trump on his first election, and I probably will support him again. Mm-hmm. Not because I think he's a wonderful, nice person. He's an asshole. He's America's asshole. And you know, sometimes we need an asshole, because that's what changes things. And I wish he was a little more polite. I wish he was a little more considerate. But he is who he is.
Yep.
And you know what? He made NATO responsible for the first time. He presided over the best unemployment scenario we'd seen in forever. He'll probably be the only president reelected in a major economic disaster in our history, because they're not going to blame him for this either, ultimately. And when they try, and they have been, come on.
Oh, yeah.
You think the public is going to believe this? Yeah, they weren't competent, but that's not the president. That's the CDC, who should have been competent, and they weren't. You know, and so everyone's going to look to blame him, and I think this is going to backfire. This is stupid. But it's not about statesmanship. It's about politics, unfortunately, and that's an ugly snake oil kind of business. And, you know, we've got big problems in this country that are going to take people letting the party politics slide and starting to look each other in the eye and going back to the way we used to do government in the United States. And when my dad was in the state Senate before he went to the Congress, he sat among the most conservative members of the legislature in the Senate. And he was a liberal at the time. I mean, liberals in the 70s were a little different.
Absolutely.
It's a whole different world. But today he would be considered an ultra-conservative, you know, I mean, probably Republican. But the point is, at that time, they would fight like crazy. He had a John Bircher he would fight with, and a Republican he would fight with, and he was a Democrat. And then at night, they would all go to dinner together, and they'd continue the debate, but as friends, mm-hmm. arguing over a solution that would serve the public at the end. Mm-hmm. Not as enemies, but as people caring about the public they actually believed they served. That's what we need again. You know, in my family, I've got Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, and undeclared. When we have Christmas, because we're all really well-educated and smart, it's like a free-for-all of public debate. You know, if you're an outsider, and we have outsiders always coming in, it's like they're waiting for the blows to start, but it never happens. It never happens. At the end of all that debate, my family embraces each other. We love each other. We defend the right to have that debate for each other. And that's what needs to be emulated in the world right now, is the fact that we can have this lively kind of debate as Americans and remain brothers and sisters within our country, even though we are so different within our country. Mm-hmm. That's what made America great. And if anything will make America great again, it's that recognition of the beauty and wonder of every living soul and the possibilities that we each shared individually that we could go do because we were fortunate enough to be here in this place at this time. And I still say that, but we have to take it back, this opportunity to take our government back at this time. Take it back in a calm and peaceful way. Start thinking about the propaganda wars that are happening right now and decide to take control of your information feed. Look in the eye of your opposition, wherever you are in the political spectrum. Start looking at the opposite news feed as well as your own, so you can at least understand the rationale of your opponent, if you will, in the debate. Because here's what happens. As soon as you start listening to the other side, you begin to understand their argument. No one comes to the table because they don't believe in what they're saying. It's good to find out why they believe in what they're saying, because one of several things will happen. You'll discover the information they are missing that you have, or more importantly, you'll discover the information they have that you're missing.
Right.
And then you might actually be able to inform one another, which is what debate is about, so that together you have good information to then go together and make a decision. That's political debate. And it can be emotional and exciting, but it isn't hateful and mean and angry, and it's not personal. It's like, hey, these are ideas we're hacking out. What the goal, if you get into the personalizing of it, pull back from that. What are we trying to do here? Let's solve this problem. And here's the other piece of that. If you go into a conversation, you want to talk about problems, you better go into that conversation with at least a solution you believe in, because otherwise you're just bitching and adding to the problem. Go with a solution and then debate the solution, and then you'll find one. If you go with just identifying the problem, you'll just amplify it. You won't solve it. So again, rule one, be respectful. Rule two, listen. Rule three, have a solution that you believe in. And rule four, carry it out till you have one that you both believe in. Now we got something we can do something with. This is how it always used to work. And now we've made it, oh, no, you're a member of that tribe. I'm a member of this tribe. I'm not doing that. You're an R, I'm a D. You're a Z, I'm an X. you know, forget all that. You're a human. So is the other guy.
Yeah.
You're part of that one, you know, and all this other stuff is really decorations on a burned down tree. You know, quit decorating the burned down tree. We keep redecorating it. We did that in 2008. We did that in 1987. We did that in 2001. Don't redecorate the tree. The tree's dead. Let's find out if we can create a new tree that builds a country that we can be proud of again, that's built on individuality, not some squishy collective. Individuality and consideration and respect for one another. I still think there's hope, or I wouldn't do this.
Absolutely. Well, the civility part is what's missing. There's no question about it. But that division has a flavor of being engineered. That's the thing. And so those forces would much, they'd much prefer us not paying attention to things like what you're talking about, for example, like where digital currency is going or whatever. If we're so wrapped up on, you know, AOC or hating this guy or these people are going to Gitmo, you know, they're going to be sentenced and tried at military tribunals, which you hear right. This all the time. And it's like, that's not going to happen.
No. And this is counterproductive. You know, these are distractions. These are to get you to look over here while the game is being played over here. This time that we're in right now, this is a time to pay attention to all the bad actors in the world. And I said this a couple weeks ago on a couple of different programs, because bad actors look for opportunity. And the opportunity is here. You know, here's what happened last few days. Putin told the Saudis to go punt on oil and gas, right? Mm-hmm. They said, nope, we're not cooperating. We're not in. You know, and why did they do that? Because they would like to bust fracking in the U.S. because we stopped their gas pipeline from going into Germany. You remember this a few weeks ago, and that pissed them off. And their currency did a free fall today. It dropped 8.5% in one day. The ruble dropped because of oil. What people don't realize is this is stupid, too, because the Russians were very smart. And the Russians' gold reserves are big enough to cover their national debt. And they have reserves worth five times their national debt. They don't have a national debt problem. They have a solution, you see. They have an economy that's solid, although the ruble is falling apart right now. This is external screwing with them. If you look at China's currency, because they don't let it float, it's as solid as a rock before this thing even started. Do you believe that's true? Do you believe their currency is solid as a rock?
Give me a break. Absolutely not.
It's the way you play the game, right? So these guys are playing this game against the Russians, and the Russians are playing back. And they're going to bust the chops of the oil price. Now, why else? Why would the Saudis then turn up the volume and give big discounts? Because they would like to screw Iran right now. Because Iran is their adversary, and they got a proxy war going on in Iraq and Yemen. And so they're already in chaos. They already have a virus going crazy, an upset population before all this started, if you remember. They were already rioting in the streets. Yeah. Now their currency is plunging. Their economy is collapsing, the remnant of it. They're panicking. And then the Saudis just screwed them on their oil price. And you know who their big customer is for oil? China. And they ain't buying. So this is... You know, there's a lot of other plays. And then you have Russia just, you know, shot up a bunch of Turks, pissed them off. The Turks just took down the wall and 1.5 million people are flooding into Europe. No one's paying attention. You got food security in North Africa wiped out by locusts, and those locusts are headed for Pakistan and China. No one's paying attention. You got the swine flu and a poultry bird flu in China that wiped out those populations. And piglets have increased 600% in cost in the last few days in China.
Wow.
Nobody's paying attention. Nobody's paying attention to all the other moving parts in the world that are still moving. Nothing's changed, but no one's paying attention. Out of left field, you know, the little fat guy in North Korea just launched a few more rockets just to make sure people are at least, hey, I'm here still, because he's like a third grader trying to get attention.
Yeah.
There's a lot of moving parts, and bad guys take opportunities like this as gateways for the next thing. So I say watch things that are out of this venue, out of the current play of the virus, and look at some of the other performances going on around the world, because there's some, you know, there's some award winners that we're missing
that
I think
point.
Are really important right now.
Do you, at the beginning of the year, we assassinated the number two man in the Iranian regime. And
right.
This almost slipped us right into a war with Iran, had they responded. So it is instantly 2020 had this flavor of moving us into this tension, into this, you know, kind of panic. And right off the bat with the year, they started off with the World War III talk. Now we have the Corona thing. Is this a flavor of the times? You think this is organic?
I think it's representative of the irresponsibility of media to a large degree by taking every small thing and hyping it into a big thing and not bringing perspective. I think it's a lack of leadership in terms of the press, in the media, and then to shut down other voices that actually have something to say that aren't
censorship.
Streaming.
Yes.
Yeah. And the censorship side of this is huge and growing and will grow even more. And this will again be used as an excuse. And think of how censorship even began on the recent crisis. The poor Chinese MD that came forward and said, hey, we got a problem. And they put him in jail until he died of the disease he was reporting on.
Right.
And he'll be forgotten, or they may be give him some medal at the end and say, oh, he was a hero, although we jailed his butt. You know, come on. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you're in China, are you going to report anything now? No.
No way.
How many dead bodies are they going to find in China and Hong Kong when this is over? Locked in their apartments, too afraid to admit they had any kind of sickness for fear of being thrown into a big stadium full of sick people where if they didn't, they definitely would.
Right.
And I'll bet you, they're going to find the bodies in the next few weeks in these places. That's really another horrible situation that people are too afraid to seek help because they're afraid the government is in town to help. Whoa. That's what's happened. And you forget, Hong Kong was in riots before this started.
Yeah.
Poof, gone, everybody's happy again. What? No, I don't think so. I think now you got smoldering resentment building.
Yeah. And they did this, in France, too, where they had the riots going on, and then suddenly they're like, oh, no gatherings over 1,000, so there goes your protest.
Right. But here's again, you know, did the anger go away? No. Now you just packed it in a bottle to see how long it's going to be before it expands enough to break the glass. This is dangerous. Suppressed emotion is dangerous. And what you see in China is a lot of it going on and slowly getting screwed up around the world. This is dangerous. Pent-up emotion breaks out in irrational ways. It's the ultimate X factor. You can't calculate it. You can't project it. And you can't anticipate what it really looks like until it's came and left. And then you can look at the debris left behind, the emotional litter pile, and what it did. But short of that, you're not going to see it till it's over. Because this is something I learned very early, is you can plan logically everything. You can lay out that playbook, which they've done. But they all throw on that big X factor called human emotion interplay. And that's why it's so important right now in these kinds of times for some of us to remember and keep our bearing, because others are going to be looking for leadership. Not everyone can be fearless, you know, so it's going to be those that can need to rise to the occasion and be calm voices at a time when people need to know that they can emulate a calm voice and be okay. They can move carefully and be okay and know that they're not alone in it, that we're in it together, because we are. We're all in it together. Ultimately, at the end of the timeline that each of us have, no one gets out alive anyway. All right. So let's rethink this, you know. I mean, we're all in it. And so let's at least find a way for us to navigate our way through it. And we will. We always do. We're a strong, resilient people, and human beings are really incredible. And this also offers opportunity, because these things also tend to bring out the worst and the best. So let's see if we can amplify some of that best as it emerges in the next few weeks, because it's going to get more uncomfortable for an increasing number of people. And I think we just need to be prepared, be mindful, and be still be kind to one another, man, and know that we're going to make it through. and be that calm voice in your neighborhood, I think would make a difference.
No question about it. Absolutely amazing. You know, the I wanted to ask you, with your scientific background, when you see what's coming in with 5G wireless and the way that it's being promoted, and when it goes into these places and the towers have all these issues, the health risks there and how they're being kind of shunned by the media, what do you think is going on there?
The health risks are huge. And I started reporting on RF health risks for a publication called Explore Magazine back in 1999 was my first article. And that's a peer-reviewed alternative publication. But what I can say is, It's worse now. And there was a really good initiative done, the Bio Initiative. People can look it up online, look up Bio Initiative, and the name associated with it that I always remember is Cindy Sage. And what they did is took 17 top flight MDs in Europe and started looking at RF. And this started with work that I was doing and others were doing in Europe at the end of the last century. And what happened is they did a report, came out in maybe 15 years ago initially, and then it was revived a couple of times. So the last revision was maybe 2 years ago or even a year ago. So it's really up to date, and it covers all of the RF impacts. This biologically is horrible in what it's going to do because it's about wavelength. When you think about the wavelength and corresponding wavelengths to different parts of the body, for instance, most of the body is pretty transparent. You know, everything kind of rolls through us and doesn't really create an effect. But there's window frequencies that have resonance harmonies where they correlate with an internal organ or a cell or an element even, you know, a specific element. And by resonating a signal in that resonates to a specific element, say iodine, for instance, what you can do is you can trick the thyroid into thinking it's got this massive overload of iodine when it doesn't, but the body thinks it does, so it begins to react as being poisoned, you know, and so you develop all these symptoms, and then you check the guy's blood, you check the thyroid, nothing's amiss, and you go, what happened here? You know, it's a mystery illness. So we're going to see a lot of mystery illnesses, I think, come out of this because of the wavelengths involved, and some of them, and I haven't read all of the studies, but you know, some of the wavelengths already used in modern culture interfere with navigation systems of birds, bees, other species because of the interference patterns. Now, to give an example, there are billions of times now RF energy surrounds us than nature produced just a little over 100 years ago because of man. And it's increasing in just exponentially increasing in terms of volume and intensity. So it's kind of like going into a loud, noisy room. You know, when you're in that noisy room, you blanket out and you have this conversation. And here's how the noisy room gets quiet. When the power grid goes down and everything gets quiet, if you think about it, your whole body will actually almost relax because you're no longer compensating for those external fields that keep you under a constant state of stress and low-level anxiety, which actually keeps you from reaching your higher states of consciousness unless you deliberately do something to calm and relax. So again, these technologies tend to amp us up, if you will. Even the power grid around us is 60 cycles, 60 hertz. This is an agitating frequency. That's why when the power grid dies, how relaxed we feel. It's why when we come into our houses, most of us kick off our shoes to ground to the earth again and get out of this field. And so when you start to think about 5G, it's just adding to that soup in a way on steroids. And by hooking every single appliance, every single thing, you're going to have constant wireless transmissions always in every space you're in. You're buried in it. And it does have a physiological effect. It affects the chemistry. It affects the basic biophysics. And what happens is in medicine, most medical practitioners were a little weak in the math, but strong in the chemistry. So they went and followed chemical models. Those strong in the math followed biophysics, which were mathematical models to explain the chemistry. Biophysics regulates all of it. That's energy exchanges at its fundamental, at the beginning point. that then result in chemical reactions, chemical changes, body changes, and manifest in terms of health. So if you really want to attack the root, you look at the energy input output. This is the root of the modern energy sciences that are coming and that are already here. And this is the root of the problem with our technology at the same time. So the overlay is, it's like the airplane, you know, delivering your mail or delivering the bomb, you know. I mean, it depends on the operator and whether you know enough and whether you're aware enough about what you're doing. And that's where we're at with 5G. I think it's dangerous technology. It should not be rolled out right now. It needs to be reexamined in the light of modern knowledge about health effects, not the 1980 studies they always lean into when they want to talk about how safe this is. Those are ancient in the world of technology. That's like going to the horse and buggy and deciding how an automobile runs.
Yeah.
It doesn't work out too well for
you. Right, absolutely. You wrote the groundbreaking book on HARP, of course, now 25 years ago.
Right.
And you brought this technology way before anyone was really talking about this. And the whole ionospheric heating of the atmosphere and things of this nature. That actual project HARP shut down, but the technology goes on.
Right.
Is there anything you want to say about it now, 25 years out, about its impact?
Yeah, I would say time has proven us correct. And the facility is no longer run by the military. It's actually owned and operated by the University of Alaska Geophysics, Geophysical Institute. And they do a lot of contracts still for the military. And so they've got use of the facility.
They've got private cover now.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they did. And it's humorous because it went from, you know, a joint project, the Navy and the Air Force and the Geophysical Institute. Then it got switched over to DARPA, and then DARPA got tired of it, and they handed it back to them. And there was an interim period where it was just the Air Force's. So they kind of passed the buck, so it would show up in somebody else's budget, you know, and they wouldn't take the heat for all the things that we were generating over the years. And so all they did is privatize it. What they learned from it, they're applying in other ways. I mean, they've moved on, if you will. But anytime they need the facility, it's available to them. And that was the point, is now it's not their budget item. It's the university's.
Ah.
And the university pays its basic operating costs out of the contract from the military and some private sector contracts as well. So it goes on. You know, and HARP was our beginning point on really coming out publicly on technology. And we've covered, you know, even in today, I mean, we've covered a whole bunch of technology issues.
Oh, yeah.
You know. And if you want to talk about the big things coming too as relates to technology, think about voting this fall. You know, are we going to be in the middle of a pandemic that they're going to want to shut down the voting booth? And how do you win as president on that one?
Right.
You can stall the election. You're going to be criticized. You're going to go forward. You're going to be criticized. You're in a loser no matter what you do on that one.
Yeah.
But here's one thing that the president could do that would be very helpful right now. By executive order, he could do it. And that would be, make it a requirement to use paper ballots. No electronic voting, no electronic tabulation, ink and paper, ink and paper. So if we have to recount, we can do it and people can trust the count. We have to have that. The one thing we should never allow to be automated, I don't care if we're in the year 3000 elections. Paper and ink, ladies and gentlemen, if that's the last thing we ever use it for, paper and ink, if we give up our paper currency, if we give up all of our paper in our whole system, let's not give up paper and ink at the ballot box, because that's the only way that you'll preserve democracies and democratic republics like ours, is if we have integrity at the voting booth. And the only way we'll ever know it is to be able to recount those ballots one at a time, watching them do it. And that's what we need. We need that. You want to start instilling confidence in the government? Start with the voting booth. Start there.
Fantastic points. Nick, I just have one more question for you. Yeah, this has been amazing going over this. And it's great to have this snapshot of what you're looking at now, because, you know, so many people are familiar with the work that you've done. And it's always been, you've always been that 10, 20 years ahead of time. So it's great to have this kind of snapshot of what you're thinking of now. The CERN project for the Large Hadron Collider has come into all kinds of interesting controversies over time, and they're rebuilding that bigger than ever.
Right.
And particle colliders, the unusual things that we've heard about them. In the case of CERN, that it actually causes issues with the magnetosphere of the Earth. Projects like that, or in specific this one, where do you think they're coming from? You know, the cover story is that they're looking for the God particle, but having been in that scientific milieu, what do you think is really going on there?
Scientists are extraordinarily curious, for sure. That's why they're doing what they do. They don't always, in today particularly, everyone has a specialty. So specialized, there's very few generalists left. I consider myself a reporter more than a scientist, but a generalist because I can talk about, I can go in and there's a lot of experts I can call and I can build my own knowledge and share it. And this is what's missing in the sciences. So they get really excited without taking the broader view. And even during the atomic bomb era back in the 40s, some believe that if we blew this thing up, we could rip the whole atmosphere off the Earth.
Right.
But they decide to try it anyway. Okay, these are what I worry about with the HAARP projects, the CERN projects. They're so big, so massive. I say slow down on these a bit. Don't be so excited about jumping forward. And something Ben Eastland, who invented HAARP, at the end of the day before he passed away, he would say to everyone in every forum, on every professional forum he ever presented in, was don't discount who you think are your opposition. Because he and I became friends, us opposing his technology, because he learned from us a lot. He learned from the scientists we introduced him to a lot. It made him a better scientist than he ever was. Because he became a better generalist that could understand the pros and the cons of what he was doing. This is the challenge for the scientific community in the 21st century. Broaden it. Move away from the US model of compartmentalization and separation, and move towards the model of integration and cross-fertilization, which is how Russia kept up and how China is surpassing us, because that's the model that works. When you blend the very seemingly totally associated sciences together that you dimensionalize and people learn from each other, and the atmospheric physicist learns from the volcanologist that maybe climate change is undersea volcanics instead of the illusion of what they say it is. Because if you look, it's the only thing that can account for the heat gradient in the oceans rising as fast as they have in the last 15 years, because physics proves. So there's a lot of things that science will tell us if we use generalists again, and we'll get to the finish line without making science politics, because politics doesn't work. Politicians, don't make scientists into snake oil salesmen. Make them back into the statesmen of science.
Right.
Make politicians back into statesmen of government. And let's make us back into the owners and the captains of our own individual ships instead of lost in the collective. And then we can reinvigorate the world, because we can start by reinvigorating ourselves with a little internal reflection that leads to a better mirroring in the world that we live in so that we can behave better and then others will emulate that behavior. That's what leadership is. We are all that. We all have that built in, our birthright. Created in the image and likeness of God. Let's behave that way. Let's change the world. Let's do it differently in the 21st century, right in the middle of the biggest disaster any of us have ever lived through. Let's do that. I think we can. I think we should. I think we'll win at the end of the day if we do that.
Wow, fantastic. Thanks so much, Nick. It's great to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me. I hope you get a lot of play on this. I hope a lot of people hear this message because, God, we need to do this differently. And thanks for doing this today. I appreciate it. I appreciate the airtime.
Oh, fantastic. Well, a huge fan of your work. It's been a great resource for so many people, and we're very grateful for it.
Well, thanks. And check us out at earthpulse.com. Lots of information there. Nothing for sale, but the information's free. So take it and pass it on.
All right. Nick, thanks so much.
All right, take care now.
Have a great one.
You too.
Thank you for joining me for this special episode with Dr. Nick Begich on the coronavirus, 5G, and artificial intelligence. You can find more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries at darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe there for our newsletter to stay up to date on all the amazing shows we have coming up for you. See you soon.